Record will indicate all the jurors are present, counsel are present. Have we now completed all the evidence in the defense case?
We have.
We've really completed all the evidence in plaintiff's case except for the testimony of Dr. Zarnik?
Except for the redirect and then rebuttal.
Okay, very good. This is redirect of Dr. Zarnik.
Redirect rebuttal.
Okay, you may resume the stand at this time, Dr. Zarnik. You are still under oath at this time, sir. Anthony Zarnik, having been previously duly sworn, resumed the witness stand and testified further as follows.
Well, Dr. Zarnik, as much as the jury probably wants me to ask you to refute every single solitary bit of evidence that's been put on so far in this case, I'm going to resist that urge.
Thanks.
Try to keep the big picture. Let me start with some questions about iRory, the employer you had before you came to work at Illumina.
Right.
Did you ever tell John Stulpnagel that you were glad Illumina made you an offer because you were looking to leave iRory?
No.
Were you looking to leave iRory?
No.
Have you ever made a claim of discrimination before your claim against Illumina?
No.
Counsel, I just need to take a call. It'll take me about a minute. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Zarnik, I was asking you whether you had ever before made a claim of discrimination before your claim against Illumina.
Yeah, I'm glad I had the extra time because I had to really think hard about that one.
I'm going to object, asked and answered, and the answer was no.
That was the question pending.
There was an answer recorded.
You think it was already asked earlier in his deposition?
Right before Your Honor went off the bench to take the call.
That's okay, then. I'll overrule the objection.
So the answer is no.
The answer is no. This was something that I spent a lot of time thinking about. Did a lot of soul searching before raising this complaint, for a variety of reasons. A lot of them having to do with the fact that I've got a visible career. This was a very hard thing for me to decide to do, to the likes of bringing a formal complaint. And, you know, you don't know what the process is like until you've been through it. But frankly, I'm very glad that we do have such a process because otherwise I would have had no way to redress this. No, I have not made such a complaint before.
I'm sorry, excuse me. Move to strike the narrative after the words, no, I haven't filed.
Aside from no, I've never made such a complaint before, the rest of the answer is non-responsive. It will be stricken. The jury admonished to disregard it.
Let me ask you this. Mr. Flatley speculated that he thought you had made the complaint against Illumina as some sort of negotiating tactic. Did you, sir, make the complaint as some sort of negotiating tactic?
It is patently absurd. It makes me angry for him to suggest such a thing. This was a very big deal, and in no way would I have raised this kind of complaint as a part of some negotiating tactic.
There was some testimony, Dr. Zarnik, about an alleged discussion in August of 1998, a walk around Cardiff that Dr. Stulpnagel and Dr. Chi testified about. Did you ever have a walk around Cardiff that was in any way, shape, or form a counseling session?
We had a great summer, the summer in Cardiff. We often walked around town discussing the company, going to lunch. I remember a discussion in which John was concerned that I was out of the office more days than he expected. I told him to refer to the list of dates that I'd given him before I joined the company. That ended it. There was no more discussion about any other concerns that he had with me. And so the answer is no. It's silly to think I would have signed his offer letter if we had had such a conversation.
And with respect to the November 1998 discussion with John Stulpnagel, any doubt in your mind that Dr. Stulpnagel did not talk to you about personal performance issues?
On what date again, please?
November of 98.
In that discussion of November of 1998, John expressed to me frustration that the company wasn't meeting the milestone that we had set out in the summer. Great frustration. It was palpable frustration. But did John ever counsel me that you don't do this, you didn't do that, you didn't do that? Absolutely not. The only thing that came out of that meeting was that John wanted us to have a research and development plan that Mark and I wrote jointly. And as soon as my meeting was over, Mark's meeting was over, we began writing that research and development plan jointly.
Now, Dr. Zarnik, you've heard testimony about your work ethic and the work hours. Let me ask you this question. Did you work hard when you were at Illumina?
Absolutely. I worked hard.
Did anyone at Illumina ever accuse you of not working hard prior to this lawsuit?
No. It's shocking to hear this. So much stuff coming out after the fact. But this was the first I'm hearing about not working hard. It is true that I didn't hang around work until 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. I got my work done typically into the early evening. When my work for the day was done, then I went home to spend time with my family.
Did Dr. Stupnagel ever counsel you about allegedly not working hard at Illumina?
No.
Did Jay Flatley ever counsel you about that?
No.
In terms of work hours, Dr. Zarnik, did Illumina have any sort of a system that you were aware of to keep track of when employees entered the building?
Yes. At Illumina, we had a system in place where you have to show your ID card in order to get into or out of the building. It keeps track of who goes in at what time, who leaves at what time. We actually used it at one point to find someone who had stolen some computers from us in the beginning of the company. If Illumina had wanted to quantitate my work hours, this would have been trivial to get those records and bring them into the case. Illumina did not do that. I think the reason speaks for itself.
When you say the card was shown, do you mean physically shown to somebody?
No. There was a magnetic reader where, in order to get into the building, you have to put your card up to the magnetic reader, and then the door unlocks and you can walk in. It keeps track of whose card it is and what time it is.
Now, with respect to the business plan that I believe Dr. Stupnagel testified about, what was your involvement concerning the preparation of the Illumina business plan?
Mark, John, and I started this company starting in April of 1998. We began meeting regularly June of 1998. We started talking about what we should be doing in June, July. By the end of July, we had decided that we wanted to write the business plan before the first board meeting. So John did set out the list of topics, a kind of outline we should have in the business plan, and we did sign up for the different parts. John signed up for parts, Mark signed up for parts, I signed up for parts. Each of us wrote our parts. We put them together, we edited the business plan, and that's what we turned over to the board.
Let me ask you about the grant application you were working on in April of 1999. This was the application you were working on when you had what we've been calling the breakdown.
That's right.
Did you wait too long to start on that grant application?
No. I had gone to the meeting to hear about... The deadline was April 15. I had gone to a meeting in San Francisco in January to hear about what things the granting agency was interested in. I actually made a trip out to the government agency sometime in February or March in order to talk with the director one-on-one about what the agency was interested in. I had set for myself a starting write date of April 1st. That gave me a little over 2 weeks to write the grant, which in my experience was plenty of time to write a grant.
Some witnesses were asked questions about whether they assisted you in connection with this grant application. Let me ask you this. Did you get any assistance at all in writing any portion of that April 1999 grant application?
No, I wrote that grant. I did ask Steve, Todd, and Chan Feng each for figures that they had created for some other purpose that I could use in the grant rather than creating it from scratch. But the grant, the scientific part of the grant, I wrote myself. The part of the grant that had to do with sort of the capitalization or the leveraging of the technology into a market is from the business plan.
When you say you asked for help with some figures, what do you mean by figures?
They are literally drawings. These are things where we had a drawing of the imaging system, fairly technical drawing. It existed already, and it would have been a waste of my time to try to recreate it. There were a couple of such drawings like that that, after I asked my guys for them, were sent to me via email, and I used them.
Other than the April 1999 breakdown, which we've had testimony on, did you have any other breakdowns at Illumina at any other point?
No. You know, I'm not proud of the fact that I had this breakdown, but I'm also not ashamed of the fact that I did. It occurred in a small room with a couple of other senior people. It was due to an illness. I knew I needed to get better. I got better. I came back. Period. The end. No more breakdowns. So the answer is no. There were no other breakdowns.
No breakdowns in front of senior managers?
No.
No breakdowns in front of customers?
No.
Or colleagues?
Absolutely not.
Mr. Flatley testified to what he thought was your standing offer to step down as chief science officer. How many times did you actually offer to step down as chief science officer?
I offered to step down as chief scientific officer twice.
When was the first occasion?
It was about a week before I had the breakdown in John's office. It was during the walk around the block that I had with Mark Chi. I asked Mark if he felt the company would be better off with him being the chief scientific officer, and he said no. And so I offered it once then. The answer that came back was no. I was reassured and dropped it.
When you say it was within a week of the breakdown, a week before or a week after?
About a week before.
When was the second time that you made an offer to step down?
The second time was in the middle of January of 2000. Jay Flatley had been on board for about 2.5 months at that point. Jay had not been using me as a chief scientific officer. One of the things I would have expected is for Jay to sit down and say, "Here's what I expect of my chief scientific officer." Something as simple as that. That never happened. So by the middle of January, I wanted Jay to know that if he felt for whatever reason he needed to bring in his own chief scientific officer, I wouldn't fight him on it. I wanted what was best for the company. I would step back just as John had stepped back, and he could bring in his own person.
There's been some testimony about activities that you were involved with before your disclosure as compared to activity you were involved with after your disclosure of depression. Were you involved, Dr. Zarnik, in every single business meeting the company had with all of its business collaborators before the breakdown?
No.
Were you excluded from every single business meeting that the company had after your disclosure?
No.
Can you describe for the jury, generally, what the difference was in types of business you were asked to be involved with before as compared to after?
The only person who was involved in every single business development activity was John Stupnagel. John had the role of vice president of business, and literally whoever had a referral, be it me or Rich Pytaluski or Mark Chi, would make that referral to John because he was the central focus through which all of the business development was occurring. Up until April, we had been working as a team on what we had decided at the end of the summer. That is, we had opportunities in this area called genomics. We had this opportunity in this area called the optical nose. We had opportunities in this area called high-throughput screening. But we couldn't work on all of them. We had to work on one. You have to do it well when you're a startup company. We chose that the company would focus on genomics. So through April, we focused on genomics. That is what we worked on. All of us worked on genomics. After April, we went through, as I've described, about a 2-month period where John and I literally didn't talk, except on very rare occasions. When we did begin talking again, I was magically now working on the optical nose and not working on genomics. The transition was very obvious. I had been involved in virtually all of the discussions before April, and afterwards I was cut out of what the company was working on.
Genomics.
Genomics.
You heard Dr. Malinger testify this morning, did you not?
Yes, I did.
In fact, Dr. Malinger was your treating psychiatrist for a period of time.
He was. I owe a great debt to Al Malinger. He's a very gentle man. He's a man who is trained in an area to help people who have problems.
Move to strike.
Non-responsive. Motion to strike granted. Jury to disregard everything but the answer to the question, which was about the first sentence after the question was asked.
Dr. Zarnik, did you from time to time talk to Dr. Malinger and tell him that things were better with John Stupnagel?
Yes, I certainly did.
And can you explain to the jury when you did it and why you did it?
Yeah. I began telling Al Malinger that things were better between John Stupnagel and me in early June of 1999. The reason things were better was that after a very cruel pummeling in the beginning of April, having not talked through April and May, the last Saturday in May, John stopped by and we talked. And we talked for the first time for 2 months. So literally, the first session I had with Al after that discussion with John, I said things are going better with John, and they were going better. I wasn't getting pummeled, and I was talking with him. That was definitely better.
Did that continue until the time Jay Flatley became CEO, that relationship?
And roughly at that level. John didn't pummel me after the date that I disclosed my depression, and we did occasionally talk. So that really more or less continued until Jay Flatley joined.
Were you seeking legal advice from Dr. Malinger?
No, not at all.
Seeking career advice from Dr. Malinger?
Absolutely not.
Seeking business advice from Dr. Malinger?
No, I wasn't.
Why were you seeing Dr. Malinger?
I was seeing Dr. Malinger because I have an illness. I had an episode in which I was having a hard time dealing with the symptoms. I talked with Al because I wanted his help in getting through that episode, getting back onto, you know, a place where symptoms are controlled. He helped me to do that. I'm grateful for that. That's why I worked with him.
Dr. Zarnik, can you explain to the jury, in connection with this ABI deal and the 100,000 stock grant, why you believe you should have been included in that deal?
Yes, I will. From August of 1998, we were a company focused on genomics. ABI was one of the likely partners for us in the genomics application. We all three talked about who to identify as a potential partner and what was the best way for us to approach them, and ABI was one of those companies. We strategized on who at ABI would be good contacts, the best ways to make those contacts. I was fortunate in that I had been asked to give talks at meetings where both the VP of New Business Development would be attending and where the president of the company would be attending. We agreed I should give those talks. I gave them. ABI became interested, began discussions with Illumina. Those discussions actually occurred after April, and I didn't know they were occurring until a couple of months later. But ultimately, the agreement that we had with ABI was to provide them with these array of arrays that you've heard of, these flat forms that have a block and have fibers and have beads. And on the beads, there's DNA. And my group was responsible for the fibers and for the beads and for the DNA that was on the beads. My group was to be responsible for how well the beads stayed in the fiber, and that was one of the targets of the ABI collaboration. My group was to be responsible for how consistently the DNA was on the beads, and that was a part of the ABI collaboration. The majority of the elements in the ABI collaboration were things that my group was to deliver. So I was involved not only in the planning for this collaboration and in doing things so that the collaboration took place, but in being responsible for the things that we were going to need to deliver. I was intimately involved in creating this collaboration and in bringing it to fruition.
Nevertheless, were you involved at all in actual negotiations with ABI over the terms of the deal?
No. The negotiations with ABI over the terms of this deal occurred after my disclosure of depression.
You recall that Miss Kearns asked you about a lunch that you had with Jay Flatley in October of 1999?
Yes.
Asked you many questions about what you said about being cynical and what Jay Flatley's response to that was. You recall that?
Yes, I do recall that.
She suggested that perhaps you were reading too much into that discussion. Do you recall that?
I recall the question.
She didn't ask you about what, if anything, Jay Flatley said in the February 2000 dinner. Any doubt in your mind as of February 7th, 2000, when you were having dinner with Jay Flatley, that he knew about your depression?
No.
Why do you say that?
No doubt whatsoever. Jay asked me during that dinner conversation if I felt that my depression was at all caused by things that happened at work. And I remember thinking very clearly that this guy is concerned about an employment action. I mean, he's getting information in preparation for what he thinks I might do in terms of an employment action.
I'll move to strike the witness's comment about his speculation concerning Mr. Flatley's state of mind. He was asked what Mr. Flatley said to him.
I don't think the witness is qualified to read minds. The motion to strike is granted.
Move to strike?
Granted.
What did Mr. Flatley say to you at this dinner that caused you to believe he knew about your depression?
Jay asked me if I felt that my depression had been caused, not depression, but my episode had been caused by things that happened at work. I told him that the best research to date shows that depression is a combination of brain chemistry and environmental effects, and that really it was impossible to separate them out.
Mr. Flatley also, in his testimony, questioned what you were doing. What your activities were after David Barker came on board as chief science officer and before he became your supervisor. Do you recall that?
Yes.
It was approximately a 6-week period you worked under David Barker's supervision?
Yes, that's right.
Can you tell the jury very briefly the types of activities you were actually engaged in during that period of time?
Well, in January of 2000, we had identified that there were 6 open positions in the chemistry group. So we were going to grow the chemistry group from...
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Dr. Zarnik, for interrupting, but I believe the question was to describe the actual work that he performed under David Barker's supervision. And David Barker didn't join until March, so I don't know why we're talking about January.
If you allow him to finish his answer.
It seems non-responsive to the question asked.
I'll stipulate you are not a mind reader either, so we can let him finish and see if he gets to the point.
Counsel, just could you restate the question and allow Dr. Zarnik to answer?
Describe for the jury what activities you were engaged in during that approximate 6-week period in which you were under David Barker's supervision.
One of the visits in which I was spending a lot of time was a recruitment of chemists to fill 6 positions we had identified several months previously. And in order to fill those positions, I was doing a lot of sorting through resumes, calling potential candidates, calling references of those potential candidates. So I spent a lot of that time continuing the work on recruiting that I had been doing before David Barker arrived. At least for some period of time under David, the plan was that I would be submitting a work plan to Chevron. In fact, that was one of my goals. So I was working on that work plan to submit to Chevron. A very large part of my activities during that time were in transitioning the projects that I had been overseeing from me to David Barker. I spent a lot of time talking with David when he was in town about what we had been doing, why we had been doing it, putting the work of the chemistry group into perspective, and getting documents to him and bringing him up to speed on what the chemistry group was all about at Illumina.
I think you may have testified to this on direct, but I want to be absolutely sure on this question of your alleged resignation. Did you ever resign your employment with Illumina?
I never, ever resigned my employment at Illumina, period.
Let's move on to Exhibit 222, which has been shown before. Miss Kearns asked you some questions about it. This was the email you sent to Jay Flatley on May 15, 2000, the day before you were going to the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing.
Yes.
Miss Kearns asked you, or pointed out, rather, that email indicates that, among other things, you would like to talk to Jay about your goals, correct?
Yes.
What did you want to talk to Jay Flatley about on the subject of goals, as of May 17th of 2000?
We had goals, and I was working on my project as listed in my goals, or at least on the aspects of them that I could. So I wanted to talk with Jay about the research fellow job description that I had written, but he hadn't commented on. Talk to him about the goals that he, David and I, had come to agreement on, and the work that I had been doing toward achieving those goals to date.
These goals you wanted to talk about were the ones you and David Barker and Jay had previously agreed to.
Yes.
I'm not very proficient with this, but we'll give it a shot. By now, I think we all know these are the final goals Jay Flatley gave you on May 19th, 2000.
That's right.
Dr. Zarnik, did you work to try to meet these goals?
I absolutely worked to try to achieve those goals to the best of my ability.
With respect to the first product, rather, the first project relating to immunocoding, can you tell the jury what progress, if any, you made on that project?
I spent a lot of time researching what were going to be the best reagents to use for the project. It's not a one-day activity. My old advisor used to say, you can spend a day in the library or a month in the lab, so you spend time before you work in the lab researching what you're going to be doing so that the time in the lab is well spent. I identified the reagents that we were going to need for this experiment. I wrote the plan for the research plan for doing the project, purchased the reagents. They came in, I put the first set of reagents on beads. I did the first set of experiments to see if we could do coding in this way. Not all of the things I expected to work worked, but one of them worked, and it worked very well. And so this was really the first time anybody had shown that you could use antibodies for doing coding at Illumina. I was the first person to demonstrate that.
Now, with respect to the second project, binary oligo encoding, Dr. Chi and perhaps others testified that this type of encoding was really just an extension of the method of decoding that had been done at Illumina, Mark Chi's method. Is that the case, sir?
It's not at all the case.
Can you explain that to the jury, please?
The method of coding that Mark invented, which is a good invention, is based on having one kind of DNA per bead, and as it turns out, it was very important for us to use that kind of coding initially, because there was so little light coming off of each bead that we needed every little bit of DNA on a bead that we could get in order to get enough light. My project on binary optical coding was to put not one kind of DNA on a bead, but up to five or six kinds of DNA on a bead. That was the binary optical coding invention that I wrote in the summer of 1998, a way of putting five different types of coding DNA on a bead so we could do decoding with five colors. That approach had the advantage that decoding could be a lot faster. With the current method of decoding, it takes, the last I heard here, was seven steps, seven stages of decoding, and that actually, at the time, was the slow process of making these arrays, was the decoding. My method had the potential of doing it in two steps, so two instead of seven. It had the potential, and still has the potential, to be a huge advantage in the rate at which these things are decoded, but it requires having on the order of five kinds of decoding DNA on the beads. It requires that, therefore, you be able to see very small amounts of light on the bead, and that's what this whole program was geared at, was in getting multiple kinds of DNA on the beads and learning how to see that very small types of DNA.
Was the imaging system that was used to see the DNA using Mark's method, was that sufficient to be able to do this type of coding?
The imaging system we had in place, the camera that took pictures, it's basically a camera on a microscope. That imaging system, it was just barely good enough to do decoding with Mark's method. It wasn't even close to good enough for doing decoding using the method I had proposed and I was working on.
Is that why you needed what we've described before as the argon krypton laser to do that?
Absolutely. It's basically a way of getting a lot more light in so that more light comes out. And if more light comes out, then you've got a chance to see it.
In that experiment that Dipping Che testified about, was that a significant experiment?
Yes. I'm just going to have to defer with Dipping on this and try not to speculate on why he made the statement he did. It was a significant experiment because for the first time we had shown that you could see five different colors using this machine in a way that you were confident that they were there. The system that we had been using at Illumina was incapable of showing in any real way anything. You've got to have real confidence in what colors are on the bead. The laser system showed that with very, very high confidence. It was a very encouraging result.
How far before your termination date did the argon krypton laser arrive?
Approximately 3 weeks.
Now, Dr. Zarnik, you were present when David Barker testified about work that Gali Steinberg did, were you not?
Yes.
Now, assuming that Gali Steinberg did the work as described by Dr. Barker in this courtroom, was that the same project or a different project than you were assigned?
Objection, Foundation.
Sustained.
I'm asking him to rely simply on what the chief scientific officer testified to as to that work. Assuming that's true, assuming Dr. Barker accurately testified to Gali Steinberg's experiments, can you tell us whether that's the same or different experiment than from the one you were assigned and were working on?
Assuming what David described is the experiment that was done, that experiment was very different than the project that I was working on. Essentially, they put two types of DNA on a bead. We had done that already. We had already shown you could put two types of DNA on a bead. I had just told that to Jay. There was nothing novel in putting two types of DNA on a bead. The thing that was potentially novel was getting four or five or six types of DNA on a bead and being able to see the light off of that bead. So doing the experiment that David Barker described would not have been an advance toward achieving what my goal was, which was to see very large numbers of bead types.
Moving down to the third goal, third project, relating to the company's intellectual property portfolio and submission of a grant application.
Yes.
Did you make progress on that project, on that line of the goals?
I accomplished all of those goals through the 90-day goals, submitted the grant application on time. I don't know whether it was funded or not because I was terminated before I found out.
So this particular grant application listed as a 60-day goal. You submitted that, and submitted that on time.
Yes, I did.
By the way, Jay Flatley testified at some point you asked him for another copy of your goals.
Yes, I did.
Did you, in fact, ask him for another copy of your goals?
Yes, I asked him it was a very simple request. I'm shocked such a big deal is being made of it.
Can you explain to the jury why you made that request?
I was in a meeting with Jay. My goals, written goals, had been on my desk. I came into work one day, and they weren't on my desk. So I asked Jay for another copy of my goals, and I got them. I taped them on the wall just above my desk, and they didn't disappear again.
In fact, did Steve Barnard see those goals taped above your desk?
Yes, Steve did.
Did he talk to you about that?
Yes, he did.
What did Steve Barnard say about the goals?
Steve laughed. And Steve said that the goals had been clearly written to be not achievable.
This is Exhibit 309, Dr. Zarnik. It's dated August 17th of 2000.
Yes.
Did you send this on to Jay Flatley?
Yes. I might suggest to increase the size by one.
What was your purpose in sending this email?
This was a status report on where I was on the two experimental goals. I wrote this to Jay right at the... Just without going into details, I wanted to give him a status report as of August 17.
This was a few weeks before you were fired?
Yes.
Does the first paragraph deal with the first goal that we looked at, the immunocoding goal?
Yes.
The second paragraph concerns the second goal, the binary oligo encoding goal.
Yes.
And you let Jay Flatley know you were able then to work with Diping Che on the Argon Krypton laser system?
Absolutely. Diping was the optical engineer in the company. This was the first time we were using the laser that he had set up. It made perfect sense for he and I to do this first time together.
Did you get a response to this from Mr. Flatley?
No, no response.
Do you recall Mr. Flatley testifying about the fact that you gave him your self-review at some point in time?
Yes.
Self-evaluation?
Yes.
This is Exhibit 320.
Yes.
This is, in fact, your self-evaluation you sent on to Mr. Flatley?
Yes.
You remember Mr. Flatley saying something to the effect, this isn't what he was looking for?
Yes.
Can you explain to the jury why you submitted your self-evaluation form to Mr. Flatley?
There are two reasons. One is the company was going through performance evaluation at this time. Just a few days before this, Deborah Flamino sent an email to everyone in the company saying, please remember to get your performance self-evaluations in. So one of the reasons I wrote it is because we had all been asked to write it and submit it. The second reason was that after Jay looked through my notebook, he then asked me for other pages of information that I might have relating to the work that I'd done. I said, Jay, you mean like a performance evaluation? And he said, yes, that would be part of a performance evaluation. So I wrote my performance evaluation and I sent it to Jay.
Which exhibit is this?
320. What does this section of your evaluation deal with? We can see 7 numbered items on this page.
Yeah, a part of self-performance self-evaluation almost always is, at least in this setting, is a list of things you think you've done that have been significant. So this is the first 7 things of the list that I had done during the 3-month period that I thought was significant.
This is essentially the period in which you were working on the goals that Jay Flatley had assigned you, correct?
Yes.
And without going into detail, can you tell us just by number which of these numbers on this first sheet of the 7 items, which of them relate to progress that you were making toward your goals?
Toward my experimental goals or just goals?
Toward any of the goals you were assigned, projects you were assigned by Jay Flatley.
All 7 of these are related to work on the goals.
Moving to the next page, you see items 8 through 19?
Yep.
Which of those relate to progress or work that you were doing on the goals that Jay Flatley assigned?
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 19.
And the others that you skipped were helpful to Illumina, but were not specifically on your goals?
Exactly.
And item 20?
The same. Just helpful to Illumina, but not specifically part of my goals.
You heard Mr. Flatley testify about your last weekly meeting with him before you were fired, a meeting that took place on August 29th of 2000?
Yes.
Did Mr. Flatley at that meeting ask you for everything you had, anything more you had relating to the work you had done?
Yes, Jay asked me for whatever I had relating to the work I had done.
By that point in time, you had already submitted to Jay Flatley your self-evaluation, which listed several items you were working on.
Yeah. In fact, Jay had asked me for this material, and I think it was the next day that I sent him the performance evaluation. And Jay actually came running out looking for me and said, "This isn't what I asked for." And he said what he wanted was tables, graphs, handwritten notes, literally everything I had done that was related to the work that I had done.
So what, if anything, did you provide to Jay Flatley after that point?
I got all of those items together, it's about 50 pages, and put it in Jay's mailbox on the afternoon of September 5th.
On the afternoon you were fired?
Yep.
Dr. Zarnik, I want to ask you some questions about that in-court demonstration that Mark Chi... We don't have the bottles there. We still have the bottles? Can you use those, please? You remember that demonstration by Dr. Chi conducted in the courtroom, do you not?
Yes, I do.
First question as to this, Dr. Zarnik. When you talked to Mark Chi and told him what you did about the flawed reagent, contacting the roadshow team, etc., did you believe at that point that two colors or three colors were being used in the 768 decode experiment?
At that point, based on what I had gathered from the scientists who did the experiment, from Diping Che, who had analyzed the results of what the imaging system was showing, and seeing the letters from molecular probes, I believed that there were two dyes used in that experiment, not three. And frankly, I had learned nothing to the contrary until the beginning of these proceedings.
This is Exhibit 276. Believing there were only two dyes used in this experiment, were you relying in part on this email received from Diping Che, dated July 26, 2000?
Yes, because what Diping would have been reporting was not something based just on the letter from molecular probes, but based on his analysis of what the experiment was showing.
You, in fact, asked him, was the experiment used with two colors?
Yep.
At any point in time before you were fired, did anybody tell you that, in fact, not two colors were used, but actually three?
No.
Now, going back to Mark Chi's demonstration in court, if you were to assume that, in fact, some of the mislabeled dye was mixed with some of the properly labeled dye to come up with what Dr. Chi described as this murky-looking color, would that have alleviated your concerns with respect to the reliability of the experiment?
Even if I had known, and honestly today I still don't know if good and bad reagents were mixed, I don't know, even if that's what had happened, it wouldn't have changed my concern about the experiment. The way this experiment is done is, as I mentioned, with a camera on a microscope and there are filters. So all you have to do is imagine having a piece of green glass. If you have green glass...
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I think I'm going to object on foundational basis. I think the witness has earlier testified he didn't do any of the 768 decode experiments. So I think there's a lack of foundation to testify to how the experiment is done.
Isn't this in the nature of expert testimony?
It's the nature of why he was concerned, why his belief was reasonable that the mislabeling caused a problem, whether or not the dyes were mixed.
And the...
It's an issue in the case, whether his belief was reasonable or not reasonable.
But the witness was purporting to testify how the experiment is done, and he's already testified that he didn't do any of them, so he's not competent to offer testimony on how the experiment is done.
He was chief science officer for a long time when other decoding experiments were run. He knows how, and has testified he knows how, decoding experiments are run. I want him to respond to what Dr. Chi did in the courtroom, and Dr.
You knew how the experiments were run?
I absolutely knew how decoding was run.
Do you know how the experiments were run?
In fact, Your Honor, during earlier examination, I ask questions about the specific experiment in question, the 768 Decode experiment done during the summer of 2000, and I asked very pointed questions about the methodologies used in these experiments, and his response was he didn't know he didn't do these experiments. So to the extent he's purporting to offer testimony on how this particular experiment was done, he just has no foundation upon which to offer testimony on that issue, and it would be an inadmissible opinion.
Other details relating to this one experiment. I'm just talking about dyes. He's testified he planned the initial 16-bead experiment.
We're not...
He's an expert in fluorescent tags. I wanted to explain to the jury why that demonstration made no sense given his knowledge and background and experience, both before joining Illumina and while CSO at Illumina.
We are not talking about a 16-bead experiment done in Illumina's very early days. We are not talking about a 128-bead experiment. We're talking about one in a series of the 768 Decode experiments done in the summer of 2000 when Dr. Zarnik was no longer CSO and about which he has testified he has no personal knowledge of the conduct of that experiment.
Is he just going to opine something about the dye, what Dr. Chi testified about the...
From his knowledge and experience, why it doesn't make any sense that Dr. Chi's demonstration doesn't mean the experiment can be relied upon, as Dr. Chi testified.
Does he know what the experiment was?
They can't have it both ways. They talked about these as a series of experiments. They were 16-bead experiments. They were of ever-increasing complexity. He designed the 16-bead experiment. He was involved as CSO with the 128-bead experiment, and this experiment is the same...
The 768 experiment?
Dr. Chi did his demonstration talking about mislabeling the 768. The use of vials in connection with decoding is exactly the same.
Does Dr. Zarnik know how the 768...
I want to repeat testimony given just moments ago by Dr. Zarnik, and I believe I'm quoting correctly... Based upon what he gathered, he believed the two dyes were used. But he said this afternoon, although I've learned nothing to the contrary until the trial, he doesn't know, he doesn't have percipient firsthand knowledge how this particular experiment was conducted.
I think I started asking him that, and he was hesitating. Do you know how the 768 experiment was done?
I'm talking about the use of dyes in connection with that experiment, that piece.
And that piece of it, he testified he didn't know.
Do you know how the dyes were used in the 768 experiment?
I know how dyes are used in decoding in the 16, 128, 768-bead experiments. I know how dyes are used in those experiments.
Okay, objection overruled.
This better be good. Based on what you know about how dyes are used in the decoding experiments... Assuming that, as Dr. Chi demonstrated, some mislabeled dye was mixed with properly labeled dye, would that have alleviated in any way your concerns about the 768 Decode experiment?
No, absolutely not.
Explain to the jury why not.
First, I had been expressing concerns about...
Your Honor, I think we're going in an area of an earlier ruling.
General Scientific?
Right.
The testimony is not allowed about any criticisms or feelings that Dr. Zarnik may have had about the general science.
Talk about this murky color, please.
All of the decoding experiments using the imaging system at Illumina were done with a camera on a microscope and a filter. If you put a piece of green glass in front of your face, you would see the green light coming out of this bottle. It would look bright to you. This would not look bright to you because there's not green coming out of it. And this would not look bright to you because there's not green coming out of it. So the same thing with the camera. Just like a colored filter on a camera. If you put a blue filter on it, you see things that are blue, brightly. So in a three-color decode experiment, there were three types of filters used. One, you see things brightly that are green. The second, you see things brightly that are red. Third, you see things brightly that are blue. There was no filter for puke green.
Let me ask you to take a look, please, at Exhibit 315. Again, you recall this was an email you sent to David Walt a week or so before your termination, August 25th, 2000.
Yes.
Correct?
Yep.
You recall this was the email that David Walt said he read the first paragraph but stopped reading when he got to the second paragraph?
Yes, I remember that.
Can you tell the jury why you sent this email to David Walt in particular?
David Walt was on the scientific advisory board of the journal. In about August of 2000, I sent David an email along with the other board members about a meeting of the journal board. David wrote back and said, "Sorry, I can't make the meeting." At the time that I received his email, my experience was that people who should have been paying attention to the concerns I was raising about dyes weren't listening and weren't responding. David was the founder of the company, is the founder of the company. He's on the board of directors. He's the head of the scientific advisory board. I considered David a friend. Certainly considered him a friend then. He had to know. He had to know from somebody that the way the science regarding the dyes was being used was wrong, and that the conclusions were wrong. So I sent him this email so at least he would know that.
Dr. Zarnik, you recognize this as notes that Jay Flatley testified about?
Yes.
Is there any doubt in your mind, sir, that at your termination meeting, Jay Flatley made a reference to decoding?
No doubt whatsoever.
Any doubt that Jay Flatley made a reference to the reagent problem?
Absolutely no doubt whatsoever.
Last subject I want to ask you about, Dr. Zarnik. You recall Miss Kearns asking you whether at your going-away party you solicited comments from Illumina scientists who were at that going-away party. You recall she asked you that?
I remember the question in general terms.
Did you, in fact, solicit comments from Illumina scientists who attended that going-away party?
No.
Did you, in fact, get written comments from Illumina scientists who attended the going-away party?
Yes.
Your Honor, I'd like to introduce the going-away card, Exhibit 340.
Same objections as previously raised yourself. Collateral.
She specifically...
352?
She, of course, specifically asked Dr. Zarnik if he solicited comments at this very party.
The going-away card isn't really comment, is it? I don't see what the tie-in is.
She suggested he solicited these comments. I want to show the jury he got a lot of positive comments in writing.
These are hearsay. I sustain the objection, as I did before, under 352 of the evidence code. I don't think it's pertinent to whether or not he solicited. I think you get nice things said on going-away cards, whether you solicit them or not.
Nothing further.